Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode number 2 of UFOs and the Paranormal. I'm your host, Preston Dennett, and my co-host today is Christine Kisara Dennett. She's my sister-in-law. Say hi, Christy.
Hello.
Okay, tonight's show is actually about underwater UFOs. Specifically, is there an underwater UFO base off the Southern California coast? Now, I actually began researching this topic about 20 years ago, and my recent book, UFOs Over California, has a chapter about underwater UFOs, and since then, I've gotten a lot of new information. I was actually contacted by the History Channel and appeared on their program, Deep Sea UFOs 1 and 2, so I'm going to share some behind-the-scenes stuff about that. And it should be a really exciting show. I've got lots of new information, and I really think there's a base there, and I think it's huge. So it should be really interesting. At any rate, Christy?
Yeah.
Guess what? I had another weird psychic event happen to me.
Oh, that's really interesting.
And, you know, if anyone out there is having psychic events, please email me at my email address. It's on the website, but let me just tell it to you now. It's my name, Preston, with an E on the end. So it's preston@pacvel.net. Email me any questions you have about any type of psychic event or UFO visitation. I want to hear it. But the weirdest thing happened to me, right? I was going to bed last night, trying to fall asleep, and I couldn't fall asleep because I kept thinking, oh, I'd left the leftovers out. I had chicken.
Uh-huh.
And I knew I put them away, though. I remember specifically doing it because I looked all over for the stupid Tupperware thing, and I ended up cleaning it out. So I remember putting it in the refrigerator. Finally, I'm like, well, I'll just get up and look. And I looked, and sure enough, I had already put it away. The countertop was clean. But I looked in the refrigerator just to make sure, and the refrigerator was cracked open just a little bit. I'm like, oh, wow. Because, you know, that's bizarre. Something had fallen in front of it.
Yeah.
And so there I woke up to, otherwise the refrigerator would have been open all night.
So that was your psychic event?
Yeah. It was
that
a little
you
thing.
Had a feeling, or you...
For some reason, I had to walk into the kitchen.
Oh.
Even though I knew that, you know, I had put the leftovers away.
Was it like a dream?
No, I was trying to fall asleep, and I couldn't fall asleep. I'm like, I just have this impulse to go into the kitchen.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And even weirder thing happened, actually, just like 2 hours ago. I was telling you we have a ghost in our office, and sometimes it changes the radio station.
Right.
Well, I'm walking by my desk, and suddenly my calculator turns on by itself, and the tape starts coming out, you know, the adding tape.
Oh, really, that's really interesting. That's like a physical phenomena.
It's bizarre, you know, and it's never happened before, and I've worked there forever, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. It's like a little sign.
I've been staying with my mother. I have never stayed with just my mother for a week. It's like the first time in my whole entire life. And I was sleeping in the bed where my grandma passed away.
Oh, wow.
And last night I was thinking about my grandma and thinking, God, I'm sleeping in the bed where she died. And all of a sudden, I got this really strange smell in my nose. And it was not the kind of smell that you smell, you know, like if you're just smelling. It was more inside my nose.
Okay.
Kind of near, kind of in between my eyes kind of smell. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I actually do. It's almost like a memory of a smell, sort of, or a smell
in your
mind's
eye.
Yeah,
and it was a very strange, sour smell, and it lasted about 10 or 15 minutes, and then it just went away.
Weird.
Yeah, isn't that weird? That was my psychic phenomena.
I'm telling you, this stuff goes on all the time, and people just aren't aware of it. So people have to start paying attention. But anyway, I did get an email question, and you know how I ask for any type of question?
Yeah.
Okay, well, listen to this one. This guy, he writes, you know, he actually looked at my website, which has a section on out-of-body experiences and how you can go out of your body and call out and say, I want to see God, right?
Yeah.
And very interesting things will happen. It's easy to go out of your body. I've got an excerpt on my website about how to do that. My website is PrestonDennett.com. But at any rate, this guy writes that, I see that you write about God on your website. What is the one true religion, and do bad people really go to hell?
That's a pretty tough question.
So you want to tackle that one? I've got an answer, I think.
Well, my the thing that I tell people all the time is believe your experiences. Some people have problem with delusion, but if you have a true blue experience where you know for a fact that it's not a delusion, that it's, you know, as real as you and me and the table that's sitting in front of you, those are the things to believe in. People can try to get you to believe in what they believe in, but to be honest, you have to really believe in your own experiences, and you have to make sure that they're not delusionary. That's just my opinion, and because I had a personal experience with God, and it, you know, it's my personal experience, and I can tell people all about it, but you know, they're not gonna feel and know like I do, because it was my experience.
Right. Well, personally, I'm not really religious, so that's a hard question for me. But I've read a lot of stuff, and I do know that people have become enlightened in all different religions.
And
in my humble opinion, I think there's many different pathways to God, and it really doesn't matter which way you take. It's sort of like all roads lead to Rome. Eventually, you'll find your way.
And like when they ask about hellish existences, or do people go into a hellish existence, I think it really depends, again, on the individual and their own personal experiences.
Right. It's my understanding they pretty much continue very much the lifestyle they had. And I don't know. That's a very difficult question, which we don't really have time to do now.
Right.
But so let's just move on to the news section of the show. Now, I have all sorts of really exciting news that's going on. I guess we may as well get the bad news over first. Now, you remember the Amityville Horror?
Yes.
Well, the main guy, George Lutz, turns out he's died.
Who's George Lutz?
He's the husband. He's the guy who moved into the Amityville house. Now, the Amityville, for those who don't know, is a really haunted house. It was the subject of a famous film. And actually, a series of murders had occurred there before the family moved in.
Mm-hmm.
You remember the whole movie and everything, right?
Right. It had quite a history, actually. I don't know the history in detail, but I do know that several families lived there.
Right. Well, anyway, he's died, and you know, it's a very controversial case, but I know somebody who knows somebody else who knew George Lutz very well and says the whole thing is very real. And after, you know, I've been investigating a lot of haunted places, and there's not a thing that happened in the Amityville haunted house that I haven't heard about in other cases.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe it.
So George Lutz, how long did he live in the house for?
Not very long. They just lived there for a little while, according to my understanding. But I don't know. It's hard to say.
Hmm. Interesting.
But we have some interesting recent UFO sightings that I'd like to talk about. On June 8th, 2006, Mrs. Walls of Bryson City, North Carolina, saw UFOs darting outside her home. And what was interesting is that they were ground level, and they were darting back and forth at high speeds. So I think that was kind of interesting.
Yeah, conventional aircraft can't do that.
Nope. There was a sighting recently in downtown L.A. People think UFOs can't be seen in urban areas. The truth is that they're seen all over the place. And this guy said he saw a silver triangle. He was actually in a Union Bank building in downtown L.A. And he saw a silver triangle. It was just sitting there for a second, and then it darted straight up. And there was this flame underneath it, and he had no idea what it could be.
Oh, flame. I don't think I've heard about that.
No, you rarely hear flames in UFOs, but they're there.
That's really fascinating in the middle of downtown L.A. He's probably not the only one that saw that.
No, I'm telling you, there's so much stuff going on right over our heads. On May 3rd of this year, Charlotte Motter of Rio Rancho, New Mexico, saw UFOs outside her home. And she called her local newspaper and reported it. And she's convinced that UFOs are real now.
When they report the UFO sightings, do the newspapers print it, or what do they do?
You know, that's an interesting question, because there is no doubt of censorship going on with the major media. And yet UFOs are so sensational, they continue to make news over and over again. So
well, I'm just wondering if more, like, if the newspaper gets more than one person reporting it, what would they do with that information if there was more than one person?
It always depends on the editor. You know, if it's my experience that if local sightings are covered, but anything that gets too big, any kind of UFO story that gets too big, tends not to get covered. But, you know, anyway, Gulf Breeze, that was a huge story. It was very well covered in the media.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know, it's kind of a double-edged sword. But let me tell you about another recent sighting on July 10th. This is actually the same one I was telling you about, right? But on the same night in Colorado, and this is actually about a half an hour later, this first guy saw his UFO at 10:30. This was in downtown L.A. The second guy was in Avon, Colorado, and he saw his UFO at 11 p.m. And what he saw were like two steady white lights flying in formation going right over the Colorado Rockies, and they at one point they seemed to be rotating. And also on the same night in Georgia, two people witnessed five to six bright lights. This is exactly at the same time, actually.
Uh-huh.
And they witnessed these lights at ground level. I mean, at just actually treetop level, sorry. And they were flashing from orange to yellow to white, and it appeared to be saucer-shaped. So there's lots of activity going on.
I wonder if that's the same, like, latitude. Is it latitude or longitude?
Latitude, that's interesting. I wonder, well, let me see, Colorado. And it could be.
Because they move so fast, or they have the ability to move in such incredible ways. They could be, the possibilities of what a UFO could do, it's just amazing to me.
Right, it could go from California to Colorado in what, you know?
Like a blink of the eye.
Yeah. Wouldn't take it long. But anyway, 2 days later, Illinois got struck by UFO sightings, and there's photographs of it. And then Indiana on July 30th. So a lot of these reports have come from George Filer's UFO files.
Oh,
the Filer files. So people should contact him if they would like to know more about it. His email is majorstar@aol.com.
Oh, and I wanted to make a suggestion.
Yeah.
If anybody out there hears the news and happens to have experienced the same sighting in the same area, they should contact you and let you know.
Definitely. Yeah, my email again is my name, Preston, with an E on the end, @packbell.net. I definitely want to hear from people. Another interesting little news item is a crop circle in Harrington, Kansas. Let me see, I've got the file right here. Because you don't hear much about crop circles here in the United States. And this is on June 8th, actually. And there were two of them. And they don't know. They don't think it's pranksters. They don't know. It's 1 mile south of U.S. 56 in West Morris County, Kansas. So, I don't know. Go
what
figure.
Kind of field? Was it a cornfield?
Wheat.
Wheat field. Oh, that's fascinating.
The wheat plants in the outer part stand 1 foot taller than the normal 30-inch tall plants throughout the field, so I don't know.
Ooh.
It's strange.
Mm-hmm.
They're not like your normal crushed circles. They're a little bit different. It's hard to describe.
Yeah.
But it's another interesting piece of news.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I forgot one piece of bad news. I'm sorry. Harley Routledge. He's a famous UFO investigator, from one of the pioneering ones, actually, with Jim and Coral Lorenzen and all these early investigators, J. Allen Hynek. He died at age 80 in June of this year of Alzheimer's disease. So hopefully these guys who have died will have some of their answers.
Yeah, bless them all.
I always hope that, you know, when we die, we have a lot of answers to all the mysteries that have happened to us. So
I'm
we'll
sure that they will get their answers.
So another interesting piece of the news is there are photographs going on around the internet of seashells on Mars. And they're very convincing photos. So, and NASA's not disputing them. So,
that's really fascinating.
There was water on Mars. There was life on Mars. We don't know what kind of, how advanced it was, but there was life.
That's just the surface of Mars, too.
Right. And I also wanted to mention a couple of new magazines. Fate magazine just came out with its latest issue. People definitely want to check that out. It's got an article about the ghosts of Rhode Island. I'm hoping to have this guy, Thomas D'Agostino, on the show later. And there's other really interesting articles in the magazine, like the Canadian Mounties who have encountered Bigfoot and ghosts and things like that. And another article about the little hobbits that were found recently. Did you hear about that, Christy?
No.
Yeah, I told you about this. And I recently saw an entire 2-hour episode on it. They found remains of very, very short people that are not the normal human bones. It appears to be some type of missing link.
Where is this?
This is on an island in Indonesia, I believe.
Oh, I remember you telling me about that.
It's actually kind of old news, but it's really interesting because, you know, they're studying other pygmies and stuff.
Little hobbits in Indonesia.
What's interesting is they lived only 10,000 years ago, and it's throwing all the theories of evolution out of whack.
And
another interesting piece of news that Fate had told about a baby who accidentally got run over by a car, got left in the middle of the street, and the car ran it over, and they recovered it, and it had no scratches on it, even though it had tire marks going over its body. So,
oh, my God. That's amazing.
Isn't that amazing? And I think I can explain that. I think it's the aura of the person, their astral body, is the superior body, and a baby is very, very close to the other side.
Mm-hmm.
And has a very strong astral body, and is actually in and out of its body a lot. And it has a very, very strong aura. And it can repel stuff like this.
Wow.
Or it had guidance, I don't know. But there was another recent story that I heard about, which fascinated me, about a gentleman who had sleepwalking disorder.
Uh-huh.
And he walked up and out of his, like, sixth-story apartment, And he walked out and fell on cement. He fell 6 stories down on cement, and he broke his toe. Now, that's physically impossible, according to the experts.
Did he wake up?
he woke up. But it's amazing that he survived. And I think it's the same principle. When someone's asleep, they're profoundly dissociated.
Oh, I know. It's like drunk people.
Right.
they can be in a major car accident and be the only person and that didn't get hurt.
I heard about another story about a person who was chopping a tree, and the tree fell and crushed their head, and they put both hands on the trunk and pulled their head out, and they were fine. And it was crazy. Or another person who got in a car accident and actually was able to squeeze out through a partially open door, but it was only open like a couple of inches. No one knows how she got out. But she did.
That would be a good thing to investigate.
Yeah, weird stuff happens.
To figure out how that phenomena occurs.
Yeah, and another thing I wanted to talk about was that film we saw about 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm still thinking about that. The whole 9/11 conspiracy is going on.
And there's a lot of different films about 9/11 and the conspiracy.
I just recently heard that there's a photo going around that shows that it was not a jet that crashed into the Pentagon, but a missile. And that there was a family who took films of the whole thing.
Oh, really?
So, and, you know, that film actually showed the damage to the Pentagon, and that was one of the more convincing bits of evidence that they had on that film. I forget the name of the film. I don't suppose you remember.
No. I was going to get a copy, but we had to leave.
But it was interesting. It talked about how there were double explosions, not just the first one, but apparently explosions that were set to, and how the building appeared to fall as if it were, what do you call it, a staged, I forget, no, whatever you call it, you know.
When they blew up buildings
on purpose.
Professionally.
Right.
There were witnesses to the explosions. Some people heard two explosions. One fireman, he heard four explosions and saw one. So from different angles and depending on where you were, near the building or in the building, people were hearing more than one explosion.
Right. I thought that was pretty convincing evidence, too.
Oh, it was. They even showed footage of the explosion. Two of them, actually. A news person who was filming the building caught two explosions coming off the side out of a window, out of two windows.
Right. You know what piece of evidence almost made me ill was when they talked about how much stock and stuff was sold prior, just immediately prior. How it started doubling and tripling and quadrupling, and then this happened. It was bizarre.
Yeah, there's a lot of explaining to be done. I really think so.
All the gold that was supposedly at the bottom of the Trade Center that was never recovered.
Uh-huh.
Well, we'll see. Hopefully this controversy will one day, you know, there's a lot of controversies going on, and that's just another one. That's all we need is another conspiracy out there, but so it is.
It all has to do with money and power. It's really quite interesting. We're living in a time of history.
Yeah, we really are. There's so much going on. Now, Christy, I have to tell you about this case.
Mm-hmm.
I just was recently contacted by a couple, and I won't tell you where they live, but they emailed me and they asked, you know, you seem to be the person to ask to answer this question. And they asked me, they said that they had a problem with something missing, something that had mysteriously disappeared. And I hoped that I would be able to help them, which was kind of a cryptic question.
It seems kind of open-ended.
And I was thinking, you know, well, what could it be? Did they lose something at the house, right? Do they have a ghost or something? I knew it was a paranormal problem. At any rate, I called them up, and this is an amazing story. And I've done a lot of UFO research, and what would you say that aliens are most interested in people? It's just a question.
You're asking me that question. Well, what are they most interested in?
Yeah, I mean, why do you suppose they contact people?
They're interested in our habits, maybe? Our culture?
They're definitely very, very interested. You know, one of the main themes is that they're interested in the reproduction, actually.
And oh.
I've run into this several times. One lady I talked to, she was driving down La Cienega Boulevard.
Uh-huh.
And she was actually 9 months pregnant, expecting her baby any day. And suddenly all the cars around her disappeared. I mean, not disappeared, but she didn't notice any. She thought, wow, that's strange. All the traffic is gone. No, I've heard that before, right?
And that doesn't happen at La Cienega.
No. And she thought it was really strange. And then suddenly this ball of light about the size of a basketball, maybe a little smaller, comes and hovers around her car. And it actually makes maneuvers in front of it and around either side, and as if looking at her, right? And she can clearly see it. It's not a reflection. And after a few minutes, it goes straight up.
And wow.
The weird silence passes, and I don't know, it's just weird. She was 9 months pregnant, right?
So what were the couples missing?
You want me to get right to that, huh?
I'm just curious.
Well, let me tell you, another case was my sister, Valerie. Right 4 days after she had her baby, she saw two UFOs. She saw several UFOs, but it was two nights in a row. These UFOs are showing an interest in human reproduction, right?
Yeah.
It's very clear. I talked to another lady who you know very well, and she claims not only to have had many ET experiences, but to have actually carried some of these hybrid babies, and she had the so-called missing pregnancy syndrome. Do you know what that is?
Yeah. That's when you carry two fetuses in the womb, and then one goes missing after a certain amount of time.
Right. Well,
it just vanishes.
That's the missing twin syndrome. Actually,
uh-huh.
The missing fetus is with just one.
Oh, really?
And this is actually not uncommon. It does happen. And it, with this lady that we know, who lives in Acton, she's had it several times, I think.
Yeah.
And it's usually she's pregnant for maybe about a month or two at the most. Maybe 4 weeks, right?
Uh-huh.
6 weeks, maybe 8 weeks. And I've done a lot of research on this since this case came to me, right? And I can't find any other case that's like this one.
Well, according to her, she had two babies. In her womb. One was growing faster than the other one. This is what the doctor said. There was one fetus that was larger than the other one. When she went in after, I believe it was 6 months, the larger fetus was gone. It was gone.
Wow.
And that's unusual. Usually missing fetuses, which are very common, occur after 3 months, and the doctor says, well, the body assimilates it.
Right.
Which is hard for me to believe, because I know that if a fetus dies in the womb, it's a problem. It can cause infection. It doesn't just vanish.
Right.
It becomes, a serious problem.
Well, this couple contacted me, and
yeah.
And I won't tell you the names or where they live, but they were pregnant, and they carried this baby for quite a while, and it was actually at 7 months, right, that they started to have this unusual experience. The lady was 7 months pregnant.
That's a long time.
And they had made the nursery. She had doctor reports that she was pregnant, and I actually have the doctor reports, too.
Wow.
That proves she's pregnant. And she's felt the baby kicking. Her breasts had swelled, the whole 9 yards. She was definitely pregnant. In fact, she was so pregnant she had trouble getting in and out of the car and stuff like this. And I've got photographs of her. So definitely she was pregnant, right?
Yeah.
And pretty far along. And then, they were driving along on their way to an event, and suddenly they had missing time, and they arrived at their destination much sooner than they should have. So it was really bizarre, and they didn't know what to think of it.
Hmm.
But they were fine. She was still pregnant. But 2 days after that, it was in the middle of the night, and they woke up because there was this really big thunderstorm. And there was this weird lightning in their backyard. And they looked at it, and it was just not normal lightning. So they closed the windows and laid down in bed, and suddenly they fell asleep. It was bizarre. Usually it takes a little bit to fall asleep, right?
Mm-hmm.
Especially when it was so exciting out. But she woke up the next morning, and she didn't feel right. And she felt a little bit sore, actually, down in her abdominal area.
Yeah.
And she says, you know what, I don't even feel pregnant. And they looked at her belly, and it was much flatter. And they rushed to the doctor, and they're like, no, you're not pregnant. And so they...
That must have really upset her.
Well, it turns out they have a lifetime of UFO experiences. She's extremely spiritual.
Uh-huh.
She reminds me very much of this other lady that we know. She collects stones and rocks and crystals and heals people. And they're not, like, anguished. They're pretty upset, and I think they're in shock, really, because this just happened.
I have a feeling she's going to see the baby again.
Really?
That's just a feeling I have, but...
Well, I told her that the baby is definitely alive.
Yeah, and that's so extreme. 7 months.
Yeah,
wow.
It's really not right, but I don't know. I'll give more news as that case develops.
Yeah, I'm really excited. I'd love to hear more news about that.
So, right now, we'll see what happens. But let's get to our show. Which is about underwater UFOs. Now, of course, UFOs come in all different shapes and sizes, and they travel all over the place, right? In the skies. But recently there's been a lot of interest in this underwater UFO phenomena. And
there's definitely enough room in the ocean for bases.
Exactly, when you think about it. Most of the ocean still is unexplored. So I think there's a UFO base off the Southern California coast, and that's what I really want to talk about, at least at first, and then we'll talk a little bit about some other, like, underwater abduction cases.
Okay.
But, you know, as I said, when I started investigating this area a long time ago, I only had a few stories, but now I've got, like, tons. And it's the first... I'll go chronologically, I guess. And these sightings actually reach back right to the modern age of UFOs, which began in 1947. And this is a really interesting story.
Is it all sightings from the coast, or are they sightings from boats? Or?
Well, we have all kinds. You know, the best kind are, of course, when people are out there on their boat or underwater or something like that, right? Actually... Those are the best. But we have a lot off the coast. People, you know, on their homes or at the beach. There's a lot more of those. There's some pilot encounters. We have all different kinds.
Oh, okay.
But this one is really interesting. What I like about this one is it was just a few days after the Roswell crash. And it began on July 7th, 1947. And at 3:10 p.m., two teenagers... walking along the beach near San Rafael, watched a flat, glistening object emerge from the ocean, fly a short distance, and then dive back into the water. And what's interesting about this is it was only 400 yards from shore. And it was at this exact time that the Coast Guard started to receive other reports of this object, which was going in and out of the sea. And here's where it gets really interesting. In the San Francisco Bay, all these steamers were going in and out of the bay, and they started to encounter, quote, an undersea mountain that would appear and disappear in various locations. And they would call it a reef or a submarine mountain or a large mass. But whatever it was moving, and it was never reported in the same place. And this is dangerous, right?
That's so interesting that they would call it a mountain.
Well, people weren't really thinking of UFOs back then. So when suddenly something appears, they're like, well, what is it, right?
Yeah.
But at any rate, after all this happened, another giant phantom reef appeared about 400 miles off the coast of Southern California. And by this time, the Navy was involved. So the Navy survey ship, the Maury, M-A-U-R-Y, was sent to investigate it. And because there was no charts, I mean, they had charts on this area, and there was no mass that was supposed to be here. And so they went to this area. Captain Hambling was the captain of the ship. And when they arrived there, this mass was gone. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And so they surveyed the whole area around it, and they found it again. Now, I'm going to quote here from Captain Hambling. He says, "Our echo sounders did pick up a strange echo when we were about 3/4 of a mile off the reported location of the reef. And it seemed that the sounders had gotten an echo from a mass about 1,600 yards away. We changed course and started right towards it. 400 yards away from it, we found it had vanished, and we got no other echo. We tracked and retracked the area using fathometers and echo sounders. We covered 5 square miles carefully and another 5 miles outside the area." And as you can probably guess, they never found this mass.
Did he ever say how big the mass was?
No, they never really got how big it was.
That's really fascinating.
But apparently it would have to be pretty big, you know, to get off their echo sounders.
And to be considered a mountain.
Exactly. Yeah.
I'm wondering if it had some organic appearance to it, if it was considered a reef of some sort.
I don't know. I'm tending to think it was some sort of giant ship or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
But at any rate, let me just talk a little bit about this area where I think there's a underwater UFO base. And this is off the Santa Catalina Channel. And it's a certain stretch of coastline stretching from about Santa Barbara in the north, south down to Long Beach. And even before I started investigating this area, other investigators had already uncovered other UFO reports in the same area.
So this place has a history then.
Right. Ann Druffel, she's a really prominent Southern California investigator, and she's uncovered a number of reports. She says of craft which cruise leisurely in front of everybody, and aerial spheres, and gigantic cloud cigars, and other stuff. So It's definitely a hot spot.
Well,
way, way
I've
back.
Seen crafts.
Excuse me?
I've seen crafts coming off of there.
Out of the water?
Yeah. Pretty much so. You've got to be careful and make sure that it's not an airplane that's reflecting at a certain time of day. But yes, with my girlfriend and I, when we went out to look for dolphins, we'd see these crafts come out of the water and hover for a little while and then go back down in.
Right. She said that. And I'm like, wow, you're kidding. She's like, no, it's true. So you actually saw this?
Yeah, we've seen craft going up and up, checking it out, and then going down.
You know, I've seen stuff out there at the beach, really tiny. They're really tiny.
Yeah, silver, tiny and bright.
Right, exactly. And they're bright silver when I saw it. That was a long time ago.
Mm.
But The whole area is definitely crowded with UFOs. Robert Stanley, he's another researcher, and we're actually going to have him on the show later in a couple of weeks.
Oh, that's great.
And he was an investigator, and he said in the 1970s, whole families would go down to the beach at Point Doom and watch multicolored UFOs that would sink under the water. So.
That's really neat.
Can you imagine people like going down there for a picnic?
How about fresh water?
Oh, there's lots of accounts of UFOs in lakes. Lake Bakchong, the Wanok Reservoir in New Jersey. There are lots of reports of UFOs in lakes. It's much rarer. There's even a report of a UFO that was in the East River of New York. So.
What about Mount Shasta?
Well, Mount Shasta's got an enormous number of UFOs. In my book, Supernatural California, I cover the whole history of Mount Shasta.
Because there's Lake Siskiyou out there.
I haven't heard of that one in particular. But I wouldn't be surprised what it takes for someone to really investigate the area, right?
Yeah.
But, another investigator is Bill Hamilton. And so I came up, you know, I sort of surveyed the literature, and with all my own cases, I came up with more than 50 cases.
That's a lot of cases.
It really is. Like in 1953, engineer Frederick Hare was at the Santa Monica Beach when he observed a squadron of saucers. And in July 10th, 1955, numerous fishermen, this was at 11 a.m., were off the coast of Newport Beach when they saw a bluish, silver, cigar-shaped object flying really low. And just a couple of hours later, another family saw it off the coast of Newport Beach on their way to Catalina Island, and it was just about 2,500 feet above their boat. And I actually have a photograph in my book, UFOs for California, of a UFO hovering right about 2,500 feet over someone else's boat. In the same area. I don't know.
I love that picture, too. It's so good.
Here's a really bizarre case. Three guys were driving along the Pacific Coast Highway on November 6, 1957, when all their engines failed at once. And there was this UFO landing on the beach. This is at Playa del Rey, right where Santa Monica meets kind of Playa del Rey.
Yeah.
And, they got out of their car, and they all observed two strange-looking men. They were normal-looking men, except they had yellowish-green skin and were wearing black leather pants, white belts, and weird-colored jerseys. And they walked up to the witnesses and began asking questions, but they weren't speaking English.
So they look like people, like humanoid?
They looked like normal people, except... I mean, normal enough, right? Because you hear so much about the grays, but these were actually human-looking people.
And the color of their skin's really interesting, too.
But at any rate, no one could understand what these occupants were saying. The occupants just walked back into the craft, and it took straight off. But at the same time, at the same day, just a couple of hours later, an officer and 12 airmen from Long Beach observed six saucer-shaped objects zooming across the sky right in that area. And the nearby Los Alamitos Naval Air Station reported other objects, while the city of Long Beach received more than 100 calls from residents. So clearly there were UFOs in the area at that time.
Wasn't there another UFO wave and... Malibu and Topanga Canyon and that whole area. Didn't somebody see a bunch of UFOs coming out of the ocean then?
Yeah, I'm going to talk a little bit about that in just a bit.
Okay.
But there was, there's so many cases. 1960, Chad Everett, he saw a UFO over the ocean. In 1970, Bill Hamilton, he covered a case where people saw a metallic saucer flying only a few hundred feet above their boat. In May 1973, a film artist, he was driving along the Pacific Coast Highway when he saw a UFO just hovering right there on the beach, sending down a beam of light.
Wow.
In 1988, Kim Carlsberg, she's a professional photographer, she was living in a Malibu beachfront home when this giant UFO just zoomed from Palos Verdes right in front of her home. Freaked her out, to say the least. But there's so much activity going on here. In 1990, a pilot was with his student when he saw a giant red glowing cigar-shaped object as they were flying their plane over the Santa Monica Bay. A really interesting report occurred that same year on May 4th. Two surfers were waiting for waves, and when out of a nearby fog bank, they saw this silver, really shiny silver disc come out of the fog bank, sort of scoot around a little bit, and then disappear back into the fog bank.
That is really something. I know, I illustrated some of those, huh? I recognize some of the stories.
Right. But what I think are most interesting, right, are the cases where UFOs are coming in and out of the ocean, right? So we have a bunch of those. Like on November 21st, 1951, researcher Harold Wilkins, he interviewed witnesses who saw an unidentified burning object fall into the ocean.
Now, was it going straight down?
It doesn't really say.
Oh.
But that could have been a meteor. You know, it's funny, the History Channel contacted me about all these, and I was telling them all these reports, and none of that made it into the History Channel.
Oh, wow.
So that's one of the behind-the-scenes clues there. They interviewed me for hours and hours. The first episode was on the Queen Mary, where they interviewed me. And only about 5 minutes made it really into the episode. So it's kind of disappointing and frustrating, but at the same time, they're doing great work.
Yeah.
I will say that. That was the first time on the Queen Mary, but I'll tell you a little bit about the second one and a little later. But another interesting case here was on August 8, 1954, when the Japanese steamship Aliki was off the coast of Long Beach, when several of their crew members observed a fireball, it says, move in and out of the sea without being doused. So clearly this is not a fireball. Finally, it came out of the ocean and vanished from sight. So I don't think fireballs can do that, do you?
No, and they would make steam and
there'd
be all sorts of things happening, and they wouldn't come in and out.
It left white smoke, actually. It did.
Oh.
I don't know. Bizarre, huh?
Yeah.
In 1955, the people off the coast of Santa Maria observed a long silvery object emerge from the ocean and then take off into space. So something is right there off the coast, I'm telling you.
Well, I know, like, there's really deep canyons in the ocean, especially in that one area off the where we were talking about, the Pacific Coast.
Right, exactly. The Monterey Trench is really deep.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know exactly how deep the Catalina is, but that area is also very, very deep. But another case, this is a doozy, occurred on January 15th, 1956, when residents of Redondo Beach saw a large glowing object sort of glide out of the sky and land on the surface of the ocean about 75 yards offshore. And it just stayed there, right? So, because it didn't go away, people started to call each other. Before long, there was a local night watchman watching it. There were lifeguards. The police were called.
That's really neat.
And so there was dozens of people watching this, a lot of witnesses.
Multiple
and as they watched,
witnesses. Wow.
I mean, it's huge, right? As they watched, the water starts to froth around it, and the UFO sinks beneath the surface. But it only sinks a little bit, and it's so bright that they can clearly see it shining through the water.
Wow.
Can you imagine?
I can.
And so,
it must have been beautiful.
They call for more police officers and divers and stuff like this, and as soon as the divers arrive, pretty much the object disappears. And the divers have Geiger counters, and they're unable to register any radiation, and the UFO never showed up again.
And it's all in the same area.
This is right here in the same area. Yeah, exactly. In July 28th, 1962, the captain of a chartered fishing boat notices a light floating in a stationary position about 6 miles south of Catalina Island. Now, this case is really bizarre. As he gets closer to this light, he sees that it's not a light at all. It's a submarine. And he's thinking, oh, well, it's a Russian sub because it's certainly not American. And he could actually see, he and his crew, could see five men on the deck of this submarine. And two were wearing white. Two had dark trousers and white shirts. And one was in a sky blue jumpsuit. It was weird attire, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so they're passing this submarine at about a quarter mile. And they're looking at it and they realize this is not a submarine. I mean, it's got only a weird tail, a really weird, weird tail showing. It was steel gray. It had no markings at all. And they're thinking, well, what in God's name is this? And guess what it did?
What did it do?
It turns and heads straight for the fishing boat and starts as if to ram it, right? And it gets closer and closer, and the captain of this fishing boat has to make an emergency turn as this so-called sub moves past them, emitting no noise at all and leaving only a little bit of a wake, you know, not a huge wave as it should have. Okay, so this man sees what he thinks is a submarine, right?
Yeah.
And it turns and it starts to ram him. And fortunately, it turns and just before it hits his boat. And he's totally freaked out. He and his crew, they're so freaked out that they contact the Navy. And the Navy shows them all these different silhouettes of all the foreign subs, and not one of them match.
That's really something.
So there's so many other reports. There's another report of a guy who was taking his boat towards Catalina, and suddenly this giant glow appears under his boat. All his compasses start going crazy. His echo sounder registers this giant object, and finally the glow passes away. And what's really interesting is there was a wave of sightings in 1992, and there was this one couple who lived high on the ridge, and I interviewed them, and they saw an amazing sight. On that night, I have interviewed actually 17 independent adult witnesses who saw stuff on that night.
And what was the ridge?
This was on a Saddle Peak in Topanga Canyon, the same area. And they saw dozens of UFOs coming out from below, not from above as you would expect. And they started to count them as these UFOs were coming out. And they eventually counted over 200 UFOs coming from behind this ridge. Now, if you think about 200 UFOs coming from below, there has to be an enormous base down there.
Yeah.
And I've talked to actually people who were abducted from Catalina Island. And when people are abducted, they're normally taken inside a UFO. These people were not taken into UFOs. You know one of them. He's a doctor. He's a very humble man. He has a wife who's also a doctor.
Oh, yeah, I remember.
And he was taken to what appears to be an underground base right in this area. And he saw more praying mantis-type ETs. So it's very interesting. I definitely believe that there is an underwater base there. And the History Channel, again, they interviewed me, and it was an experience. Let me tell you, what you see on TV, you have to kind of take with a grain of salt. Let me just put it that way.
Yeah.
But remember that lady you talked to, that we both talked to, who was, she experienced an underwater abduction.
Right. She got very sick and got abducted. She was cleaning with Clorox and ammonia, and she got poisoned. She got abducted.
Well, you know what? Our time's up. So that was
our
show tonight.
We should do another show on this.
Yeah, we'll have to do another show on underwater UFOs, definitely. But I want to thank everyone for listening. You've been listening to UFOs and the Paranormal. I'm your host, Preston Dennett, and my co-host is Christine Kisara Dennett. She's my sister-in-law. And next week, I hope you all join us. My guest will be Linda Godfrey. She wrote The Beast of Bray Road, and this is about the Wisconsin werewolf. So definitely tune in, and thank you all for listening.
Thank you.